there have now been 4 days of protests in Melbourne and hundreds of arrests. People have been protesting against the lockdown and demanding a vaccine mandate for the construction industry be lifted. On Wednesday, police shot rubber bullets and pepper rounds at those protesters who had gathered outside the city's Shrine of Remembrance, locked in a standoff with riot police. Things were a bit quieter yesterday, but it's a public holiday there today and things have flared up. Rebecca Holt is a New Zealand journalist based in Melbourne. She's on the line from there now. Kia ora, Rebecca.
Kia ora, Brian.
How many arrests all in total since the protests began? It's well over 500, isn't it?
We are looking at, we'd be around, I think, 800 now, because there was a late run this afternoon of another 215 arrests in a suburb just a short distance from where I live.
Did you go down there and check it out, or did you stay way away?
Look, in this environment, I decided to stay away because there's a lot of people running around without masks on, and we've got, as you will have seen, well over 700 cases in Melbourne today, so it just feels like my presence as a frontline reporter wasn't required.
Why is it on a public holiday? For some reason, I don't expect things to flare on a public holiday. I was a bit surprised they did, although I think people watching the story like you aren't surprised at all.
Look, there's not a lot of surprise at this point. There's very disparate influences in these groups that are protesting, because it's not just one group. There were protests actually last weekend. It started on the weekend, and there were very violent scenes there. But the ones that have rolled out through the week kicked off outside of a union building on Monday, and they were initially very much, there were people from the construction industry and union people who are involved. Now, that unfortunately has been inflamed by the involvement of three distinct groups, the far right, anti-vaxxers, and some well-known conspiracy theorists. And as New Zealanders know very painfully, there's a clearly acknowledged issue in Australia with far right extremism, especially the presence of neo-Nazi groups. In January, ASIO, which is the Australian government's own intelligence organisation, warned of the dangers of far-right groups here, saying that they accounted for 40% of that agency's counter-terrorism work. And even the Victorian Police earlier this year warned a parliamentary inquiry into extremism that online commentary on COVID-19 had provided a recruiting tool for far-right extremist groups. And that's, I think we're seeing the results of a coalition of those groups play out in Melbourne now, and it's bearing fruit. This long lockdown, there's a lot of vulnerable people spending a lot of time online.
The use of pepper rounds, I've not heard of that before. Can you tell me a bit more about this munition?
I don't have a lot of information about that. This is a new munition. There were several new things that the police used that they'd only just taken delivery of. I understand there were two things. There were these pepper rounds and little sandbag rounds that they were using. So if you saw those shots from if you saw the vision from the war memorial in the centre of Melbourne on Wednesday, where people had sort of all gathered at the top of it and then the police approached, while there was what sounded like gunfire, that wasn't what you'd describe as live ammunition. That was the pepper rounds and the probably what we'd understand to be a similar ferocity to rubber bullets as such.
Firing that sort of stuff into a crowd, though, in Australia, how unusual is that?
Well, this is a crowd that had occupied a war memorial that was erected to people who'd fought actual Nazis. And there were people at that demonstration, that rally on Wednesday, who were urinating on the war memorial and throwing up Nazi salutes. So we were not in what you'd describe as a usual environment. And you're right, it is incredibly unusual. And I've been reporting back to RNZ since the the start of this pandemic, and there have been times when I have reported on very heavy-handed policing by the Victorian Police. There is the feeling on the ground here that there was not a lot of choice left to the police in terms of how it had ramped up. There was definitely a feeling that they'd been taken by surprise by the ferocity and the violence of these groups. That's a very much a general public feeling as well. I've spoken to and interviewed several people who accidentally walked into the middle of these rallies and were really scared.
So why did things flare up more today?
Well, through the week, it sort of built up to the Wednesday, and then there was a significant, there was 500 arrests in one day, quietened down yesterday, and there was 80 or 90 arrests yesterday. And then because I think it's a public holiday and there's a lot of people on leave, there was a different feeling to today. You could see that the vision, what's been interesting is that there's been a lot of people wearing high-vis garments, so clothing that you would traditionally associate with construction workers. Today that was different. There was a lot of young men at this shopping centre just wearing tracksuits and sneakers, so they had a different look to them. And not coincidentally, today there was some very solid reporting that several individuals have been arrested who were wearing high-vis wear, but they didn't work for the construction industry. They are essentially bad actors, if you will. There was a small business owner who was reported on today in a story who was horrified to see someone wearing one of his business's shirts, and it was somebody who's never worked for him.
What have the unions been saying about the protests as they've developed, particularly in the last few days?
Well, there's been no tolerance for the violence. The unions have been, right from the start, condemning the actions. And at the start of the week, there were people from their own industry involved in those actions outside the union on Monday. As it's gone on, it's clearly there's other groups involved, but the unions, very broadly, multiple unions have come out and condemned all of this. And there is some criticism that unions have tried to play up or magnify the involvement of the far right and the anti-vaxxers. You can't deny that those groups are involved, but there has been criticism that the unions haven't been taking responsibility for their own people's involvement.
Is there any evidence or any direct, connection you can see in terms of information, organisation online that's galvanising the protests in the last few days?
There are researchers. There's a researcher from Deakin University, Josh Roos, who has been following anti-vaxxers and conspiracy movements for a long time. And he says it's no coincidence this is occurring very vigorously in Melbourne, given what the city's been through with the lockdowns. And it's really built in momentum over the last year. He's saying most recently that the far right groups have infiltrated, and his research is that the far right groups are consciously appropriating the language of anti-vaxxers, of conspiracy movements, and are seeking to exploit people's anger and distrust.
One would have to say that they have been particularly successful. Would you have go so far to say that we now have a pretty organised and reasonably well-resourced far-right movement in Melbourne?
Yes, I would. And that's not just my opinion. That's the opinion of ASIO, as I said earlier, which is the Australian Government's own intelligence organisation. They warned of the dangers of far-right groups last year. And curiously, the federal government responded to that by insisting that ASIO dump the term far right and instead use a term which was ideologically motivated violent extremism. Now, regardless of what you call it, the significant emergence of these kind of groups in the middle of pandemic is hugely concerning.
And do we expect the protests and the clashes between the police and protesters to continue over the next few days?
There's a feeling from the police that they have picked off ringleaders, but it's not being stated explicitly. And look, even late today, there's reporting about discontent in the police ranks. Frontline police are apparently saying, not attributing the quote to anybody, but reliable crime reporters are saying that the frontline police feel that the riot squad should have been sent out earlier in the week when those scenes of violence kicked off and people walked across that big bridge and before the War Memorial occupation. There's very much a sense that the city is frayed at the nerves, and we are 236 days of hard lockdown here, not the same as the Auckland lockdown, granted, but it's still been a very long time. So we've got a holiday weekend. People can't gather at the pubs like they normally would for one of the major sports matches. You'd think the police will be getting very tired. They've all had a week on the front lines.
Isn't it the final of the Aussie rules at the MCG this weekend?
Yeah, and you're getting me open to sports reporting, which is not my specialty.
I know, but it's sort of one of that's big. That is very big in Melbourne, and not being able to go to it. But yeah, sorry to throw that one at you. But getting back to something, I'm sure you know lots more about, and that is whether there have been any attacks or in terms of the protests on vaccination. Given vaccination seems to be one of the triggers of this whole ongoing violence at the moment.
Yeah, the anti-vaxxers are very much a loud voice in these rallies. And there was an attack on an organisation called CoHealth, who I've actually dealt with. It's a vaccination centre that caters to the most vulnerable in the community, including rough sleepers and refugees. They've had to close for 4 days, so they can't get out of vaccination. And that was because their healthcare workers were abused, and allegedly one nurse was spat on. They've been told not to even wear their uniforms in public after that. Now, there's a little bit of irony today, not a great deal of surprise. The health department revealed that a person who attended Wednesday's rally has tested positive and is now in hospital. So a small number of Victoria police officers have been identified as close contacts of that protester, and they're going to have to isolate and get tested.
Moving away from Melbourne to Queensland, and this is a story I think you've been following very closely, a refugee family that ended up in a small town of, is it Biloela? Is that how you say it?
Biloela,
Someone certain, I mean, there was quite a struggle to get there, and then some uncertainty as to whether they'd be able to stay, but a lot of the people in that small town wanted them to stay, right?
Yes, that family, so mum and dad are both Sri Lankan Tamil refugees, and they both came independently to Australia, met and married and moved to this little town. Nadir's, he had a job at the meatworks up there, and they went on to have two little girls. And one day after the mum's bridging visa lapsed, or less than a day, 8 hours, there was a dawn raid, and they were taken in March 2018 to a detention centre in Melbourne, so two states away. And that's where I first interviewed them in 2018, so I've been covering it since then. Now, the big development for them this week, they've been shifted sort of from pillar to post in the Australian detention centres. They went from Melbourne in an attempted deportation in 2019. They were taken to Christmas Island, where they were only people held in that detention centre for a very long time. And then their little girl, the youngest, who's lived most of her life, she's 4 now, she's been in the custody of the government since she was 8 months old. She was airlifted off the island in an medical air evacuation because she got very ill. And that was a tipping point for the government. They released them from the hard detention environment into community detention in Perth, and they brought the rest of the family over. So they're now in Perth on the other side of the mainland from where their home is in Biloela in Queensland. And under the current visa that they've been given, they've just been given this week a 12-month extension, but only three members of the family, which is very curious. And this one little girl, her matters are still before the court. She hasn't been given that same visa. And so they have to stay in Perth in this community detention facility instead of going back to the little town where they have all this support and a community that desperately wants them back.
A campaign for their return amongst people in Biloela. How did that come about? Was it just a spontaneous response to what some of the stuff that people like you were doing?
I had nothing to do with it. I'm just a journalist. But it was they had very good friends there who were horrified that there'd been a Dawn raid and they'd been taken, because having your bridging visa lapse as such is not an unusual thing, and you would normally just go through the legal processes that plenty of asylum seekers go through. But there was very much a palpable sense of outrage in the small community that somebody who was a valuable worker, they had a lot of problems getting people to go to these small towns and fill those jobs, that someone had been snatched, let alone with little kids, and that they were then taken. So it is really interesting. There's a small group of people, some social workers that knew the family, people that had taught the dad English when he first arrived. They all joined forces and have built this really significant campaign. So that's been a fascinating story to watch evolve. And now hundreds of thousands of Australians have signed a petition saying that they believe this family should be released back into the town that wants them. And it's become a bit of an albatross for this government. There is a feeling that they granted these 12-month visas so that they could ride this issue out instead of it becoming an election issue in the next. They haven't announced when the next federal election will be in Australia yet, but it's expected that this 12-month visa will see them through that.
And Biloela is what? It's in central Queensland, inland from the coast, in a shire, I think, called
inland
Banana.
And north. Inland and north. I think it's 9 hours drive north of Brisbane.
And the chances that they will eventually be able to get back to that town, back home?
Oh, I don't like to take bets on the immigration ministers of Australia, Brian, because I would be a very poor woman. But there have been five or six ministers through this portfolio in the time that this family have been locked up, and many of them they've made thousands of discretionary decisions in favour of people with far less, and I mean far less support than this family. So it's a very political decision now. The government's essentially made a rod for their own back by persecuting this family. And I don't use the phrase persecuting lightly, because I've been reporting on this family for so long now, and the effects of detention on the little girls has been terrible on their health. So it's something that the government's knowingly done. They could have avoided this a long time ago.
Dumb question, Rebecca, but is this a case of bureaucracy just being really, really blunt, or is the government still making it very difficult as a signal to other families who might be thinking of the same thing, that you don't really want to come to Australia because we're going to make it as hard as possible for you?
It's definitely the latter, Brian. It is part of the government's very clumsy messaging that you shouldn't attempt to arrive in Australia by sea. And now the government, including Prime Minister Scott Morrison, will often use the term illegals. It's actually not an offence under the Migration Act to arrive in Australia without a visa. It was Scott Morrison in 2013 who ordered officials to start using the term illegals. So that's what you're dealing with here. So in some ways, it's not just bureaucracy, it is it's a regime.
Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Brian.
And I'm wishing you a peaceful weekend in Melbourne. Here's hoping, fingers crossed.
Thanks so much.
That's Rebecca Holt, New Zealand journalist based in Melbourne.